Hi, Caitlin. Nice to talk to you. How are you?
I'm good, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm great. This whole ordeal, there's nobody else I'd rather do something this crazy with than you.
I agree. And I think that really just speaks to how slightly embarrassed I am sometimes when people are like, oh, Caitlin, what are you reading? You're so entranced by this book. What are you doing? And I have to say, oh, sorry to be reading during work. I'm at the first sex scene of my lesbian romance novel of the day.
Yeah. That's how we introduce this. Oh, yeah, we're two women who read way too much lesbic and way too many public spaces.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank God for e-readers, right?
Thank God.
So I think we both have alluded a little bit, or our first foray into lesbic, but
right.
Because we're talking to each other, but maybe being listened to by other people, maybe we should go into it. So I'm happy to rock, paper, scissors for who has to tell their narrative first. I don't particularly care. You just let me know.
Okay. I can go first. Do we want to focus specifically on why I started with lesbian romance novels?
What? It's your narrative, whatever you want to tell.
It wasn't ever a conscious choice for me to seek out lesfic. This is going to be embarrassing. I know what happened. I know how this kicked off. So I have been buying queer books and a lot of queer lady lesbian books out the ass recently. And so all of my ads, all of my suggestions on any website are for various books written by women about like same-sex desire. So I've been seeing ads forever about these books, about lesbian romance novels, because that was the one thing that like Barnes and Noble could figure out that I wanted, that I might be interested in reading. And I was really stressed and I was really sad. And so I dug up my old Fiction Press login, which if you don't know, like it was the sister website to fanfiction.net in the early 2000s. And it was where you could post original fiction online in a serial format. You had a lot of writers who, you know, you would first read their slash about Harry and Draco, and then you would go over to their Fiction Press and read their personal writing that was just vaguely not Harry and Draco kind of situation. So I was really stressed and really sad, and there is this great piece of original fiction that I will have to find and we'll have to like link to it in some capacity that was written like a solid 10 years ago, but is really still like true to form today. It's about a girl from a white supremacist family who goes to Bible college. And it's about a girl named Liberty. Her mother and her brother are like white supremacist, and she goes to school to study music, and she falls head over heels for this girl who is from a conservative family who sent her to Bible college when they realized that she was having relationships with other women. And it's this whole thing about like exploration of your identity and your families. And I return to it every couple of years because it's so well written. It's so sexy. Like the sex is so good. And it's also like at the end, she becomes a pop star. And so I read that and was like, I read that like stressed before I had to go out of town for work and was like, I need to be reading something on the train up to New York. I'm in DC. I need something that'll keep me the 3-hour train ride really excited, but that I haven't read before. And I want it to be gay. I like really wanted it to be gay. And so I bought a book that Barnes and Noble said that I would like called The Lady's Guide to,
isn't it like the Celestial? Now we're both messing it up. This is the Waite book,
Guide
right?
to Celestial Mechanics there by Olivia Waite. And I read the whole thing on my train ride up to New York. I like checked into my hotel. I only had 30 pages left of this book and checked into my hotel. I'm in New York City. I have a free day before I have to work. I'm going to sit in my hotel room and I'm going to finish this book. And then after that, I just wanted more. And that's all I wanted. I just wanted lesfic. And here I am today.
Here you are today. I mean, I got that text message. I've got to look into it more. I think the weekend before I sent you, spouse and I. So we should say we're still discussing how we're going to say people's names on this podcast because we're incredibly cautious about ever outing anybody, even if they are out, because that is just not always safe with every single person. And this podcast will be much more accessible. Cool. I can speak. So if we get a little weird with names or use letters or...
Yeah.
No, I'm saying spouse. And my spouse is 100% behind this podcast. But also, she is in a new position at work. And while she's out at work, she hasn't met everybody at work yet. So I'm still being careful. Spouse and I moved to Connecticut. I have like a whole weekend off and I can do whatever the hell I want. Oh, I haven't read for pleasure in a long time. Somehow in the stack of books that I hadn't read, there was this sci-fi lesbian fantasy book subject material. I'm not going to say what it was because I didn't finish it. Well, I guess it's fantasy. I know fantasy and sci-fi are separate. I'm tripping over my language. Pardon me, everybody. I can cut this and start over. Maybe we should do that.
This is great.
I did not finish it because the particular genre was just... The book is 30-something years old and just it was a little hard dated-wise for me with certain gender roles that I'm sure we'll unpack at some point. I was just like, I need to read something else. And back in the day in grad school, the graduate program I attended only met during the summer, kind of graduate summer camp. And at the time I was there, the first two of the four summers I did it, I really thought I was one of the only queer people on campus, let alone the only queer woman on campus. This is not true. But again, this comes to not outing other people. These things came to my attention later. But my birthday's also in the middle of summer. So I used to... over whatever weekend corresponded with my birthday, download and purchase two e-reader lesbian romance novels and watch Debs and or Imagine Me and You and like just try to get pride in a small contained little bucket in the middle of this very tiny town in Virginia because I desperately felt alone and wanted something that was positive where nobody dies at the end because so much of our narrative, people die at the end. Long story short, moved to Connecticut. I'm like, I'm going to jump back into that. And then you and I start talking. And all I know is we both go like, hey, I read this book. I read this book. And now I think between the two of us, we're close to 75 novels in 3 months.
I think so. I think we've read a disgusting amount of stuff. I'm impressed and concerned.
I assumed burnout would happen because of how much has happened. Because we've talked for a while about sitting down and doing this.
Yeah.
And I'm not burned out yet, which is probably not healthy either.
I know. I thought that I was getting burnt out because I think you're a little similar. When I find an author that I love, I want to read everything by them. And then you stumble upon that one book that maybe just doesn't click with you the right way, or you can recognize, oh, they did this better later.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh God, is this it? Have I reached it? Am I just not into this anymore? And then I just realized, no, you have to take a break. You can't read 8 books by the same author in 3 days and expect to still love them. So there's some interesting comparisons that I think with all of these authors, because they're all so prolific, they've all written so many things, and it is exciting to see the growth and to see changes, especially for some of the people that I've read where the books that I've been reading of theirs have only come out within the past couple years, how issues like social issues and political climates and things like that have entered into these books that I'm not seeing when they were first starting out. So I'm excited to talk about that kind of growth.
Yeah. Well, and where they, it's very, I'm just going to trip over all the language. Hopefully this gets better as we continue to try to do this experiment. It will. And it really is an experiment. I used to read them for escapism. Now I read them both for escapism and with way too much of the lens that I put onto other literature as well. I'd love to unpack all of this. I don't think we should do this right now, but I'm also so, like, so uncomfortably aware of my own sexism reading romance novels to the point that it's been really healthy to read them at this level and be like, okay, look, you claim to be a feminist, you claim to be pro-queer women and doing these things. Why are you judging this with such an intense amount of reservation? Why are you putting so much on this?
I think that's why I love the romance novels, because we've mentioned, like, Debs, we've mentioned Imagine Me and You and other things where they're sort of canonical. Mm-hmm. Everyone sort of is, you have to watch these things. You have to know these characters. We put up, I think, especially as queer women, I think we put up with the barest of bones of a storyline and the hint of sexual attraction in media. And so for me, what's really exciting about these books is the desire in them. These characters feel such ardent. And it's not just, oh, well, you have a really great personality. There is that, but there's also the real sexual tension and the sexual drive. And for the most part, they're not having sex with a woman for the first time. It's not like a coming out narrative, as you've said. We were talking about why we have been reading these things at the speed of light. And for me, what I have liked beyond the sex, good or bad, be that as it may, I appreciate that it took me a really long time to get to one of these novels where the story was a coming out story. I even made a note of it because I was, like, shocked because it was, I think I was, like, 9 books in. It was Melissa Braden's Beautiful Dreamer, which is the one with Devin Winters, who's from Philadelphia, the real estate broker, and she goes back home to take care of her sister.
I completely read it, but both of them are queer in that.
Both of them are queer. It's not a coming out story, but it's the first time that I read that somebody had to come out to anybody else, because
I don't follow.
Yeah. So Devin, who is the, like, ice queen real estate person, comes back to town and she hangs out with all of her high school friends,
right?
And they go to, like, a diner and realize that, like,
oh, the scene with the and that's much more your world in real life, so I'm fascinated about how that went for you.
This was the book where I was like, oh, this would be how I would be written about, like, an obnoxious, cold-hearted business person comes back to their swamp town hometown and runs into, you know, someone who knew them in high school. And but she has a scene where they're at the diner and they're eating burgers and she has to come out to her high school friends because they're asking her about her personal life. And she's like, actually, no, I'm super gay.
I don't have the book in front of me.
No, I took a note and I sprung this, like, I wasn't planning to talk about this because I don't remember much about it, but I made, like, they're having dinner and talking about, like, their ex-boyfriends and, like, who still has the torch for Devin, and she has to, and they're talking about the other girl. They're talking about the love interest, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, like, oh, well, she's, you know, she's a big old lezzy, X, Y, and Z. And that forces Devin to come out to her friends. So it was super interesting. Like, that was the first time that anything like the words, actually, I'm gay, had to come out of anyone's mouth. Because before this, everything that I had read, this was my 9th or 10th lesbian romance novel. Mm. It was like this utopia where everyone was a lesbian.
And they haven't dated each other or slept with each other.
And their parents are always, like, it took me a while too to get to books where the parents weren't okay with it. I really found this hole where friend groups of lesbians and every person that they met was also a lesbian that they had never met before. There are obviously some authors who do this. Claire Lydon does this really well, where there are queer spaces and they meet their people in queer spaces.
Right.
But for so many of these, especially the like very what I think of as typical like Hallmark movie story, like the cold-hearted business person comes back to their hometown, runs into someone that they vaguely knew, and it opens up their heart and they end up realizing what's more important than work. So many of these stories happen in these romance novels, and they're always meeting each other or meeting the circle of lesbians not in a queer space, which is just not my experience in the real world. So it's kind of like this perfect utopia where you're at the grocery store and you run into this like smoking hot person.
But you have to pick, they have to be a brunette or a redhead because the other one has to be a blonde.
I know.
And I want to make fun of this more. We happen to each be a dark-haired individual and a light-haired individual. Like, I get where the writing component is like, it's much easier if you can just allude very quickly to one of their physical aspects and you don't have to be super descriptive if you're talking about their hair. Anybody who finds this podcast and by proxy finds me will notice that my handle is Rebecca Writes a Romance. And the reason being is I completely believe if I'm going to walk the walk and talk the talk, do the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna write something, but I'm choosing to completely approach this as the good dramaturg I am and fully do research the whole way across, you know, really taking that into consideration. So I was writing just, I was like, I'm just going to write it. It's NaNoWriMo. We'll get it done. And about a third of the way through, I was like, nope, I'm going to actually put more work into this. And I found myself, I will even tell you in the first book, one person with dark hair, one person with light hair, super easy to reference, super easy to move on from. In any scene, you can just figure out who's talking by a quick, like...
And I would make fun of that, except in all of my relationships, I am a blonde and I'm only ever date brunettes. And I...
I was going to say, that's your... I don't want to say your type. Can I say your type? But you find yourself... often attracted to people with darker hair. Actually, I'm also in that boat. It doesn't mean I haven't in the past been with lighter haired people. I'm just usually with women with darker hair. That's just how it goes. But that makes for a really difficult novel, especially prior to me cutting all of it off, because they're like, oh, the one with medium length hair and the one with medium length hair plus 2 inches. So I get on a writing element where it works, but it also, I sometimes I'm just like, oh, a blonde and a brunette.
Yeah.
One's a curmudgeon or a business person. One is open to all the world. They're completely available. Or one has been completely heartbroken and will never open their heart again without X, Y, and Z. The other thing that's really hard for me, and you mentioned it with Beautiful Dreamer, which takes place in South Carolina on a beach town. You grew up in a beach town in the South as well. I grew up in the deep South. I can't speak to what your experience is, and I don't want books to be negative about and perpetuate negative stereotypes of the South, but I have never in my direct experience been out and queer in a Southern state without always looking over my shoulder anytime I'm with another lady, even a little bit, even in safe spaces, you're always like, where's the emergency exit, subconsciously.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's like for you.
Well, but I feel the same. I think because I so rarely present as queer to...
So for people who can't see you, you're a femme presenting person who's like, and is queer what you use to describe yourself? Like, is that the... I don't want to project on you. I say queer, but I don't want to put that on you.
I have started using that. I referred to myself as like a gay lady, lesbian, you know, like I'll sort of take it, but like, yeah, I'm using queer to describe myself more and more these days. So I sort of use it interchangeably. But going back to your point about like looking over your shoulder and never feeling like 100% comfortable, I've also never been as a femme presenting person who dates femme presenting people for the most part. I've never been in a situation where I'm not also expecting to get attention or to get people commenting on it. I just think the lack of catcalls and the lack of like obnoxious, gross men, you know, next to you at the bar who see you holding hands with your girlfriend and they're like, oh, is there is what's happening here. Like, the fact that never happens is beautiful. Like, I would love to be in a world where that never happens. But it is, like, when they're making out under a solo street lamp in the middle of Greenwich Village or something. I mean, maybe not there, but, like, there are just so many moments of making out and making public declarations in public that I think would attract a lot more attention than they do in these novels.
That's the true beauty, right? It's not even the, like, oh, these definitive novels of true love existing. You're like, oh, these novels where being queer doesn't get your ass kicked below the Mason-Dixon line. And you don't have to be in a major city, too, for it to be semi-safe.
Well, and I think that's what's so exciting about, and part of what we want to unpack together is, so me personally, I'm an image person, and I love unpacking what makes a queer image. Like, what do we think, why do we think something is a queer artwork? And a question that I come back to a lot is, what makes a lesbian romance novel? And I think we've touched upon a lot of the things that I would say make a lesbian romance novel if I were to sort of start classifying things. And it's interesting to me, things that are romance stories about lesbians, but they wouldn't be called a romance novel because of X, Y, and Z, some of the things that we've just spoken about.
Yeah. So we'll, I'm sure, as we approach this week by week with various things, like, yeah, even just unpacking what makes something lesbian romance versus even, like, lesbian paranormal or lesbian fiction or lesbian historical romance, lesbian historical fiction.
Yeah.
And the, I don't know. I've read a lot of books about what keeps it separate, and nobody says the same thing twice. I don't think we're going to agree on what lesfic is, because you're very much, like you said, an image person, and I'm very much a person based on text. That is my driving force.
Yeah.
So we kind of hinted on it earlier. The one thing that's really unique about these lesbian romance novels to me is how and where I project myself. Most of the time, it's into the annoying pet. because let me, and this is why, like, I am a cisgender queer woman. Like, I'm confident in that description of myself. But then when it comes to, like, my presentation, I am definitely not femme. I'm not called femme by anybody in my life. The butch dichotomy in these novels, I'm not that version of butch either. And that version of, I've never been.
Yeah.
But then there's people like me who are, I'm not femme presenting like you, but also if you and I walk down the street, people are going to probably assume I'm gay, and by proxy, maybe wonder if you are, because that's how I read.
Yeah.
Mm. So, like so many of the novels we're both currently checking in about, it's often a feminine, two feminine presenting people.
Yeah.
And you just started reading Fiona Riley, but you're reading her newest one. Wait till you get to the Match series. Mm, we got to talk. But but I don't see myself in much that I've read yet.
I have also noticed, and I don't have my note in front of me. I've been trying to take notes every time I finish one of these romance novels and sort of pick apart, like, what has stuck out to me. And then I read, like, three in a day and was like, I don't know. But I've picked out, like, it's noticeable with the books that we've been reading and touching base upon, like, when they do write in a butch character. I think it's funny for me because I do feel very represented in these books in a way that I don't hardly ever, because we have said I am the femme cis presenting woman who wears a lot of blazers and heel combos. But what's so interesting to me is I'm fine, you know, like, I can read some femme on femme romances. I enjoy it. It doesn't stick out, you know, like, that's me being, like, excited to read some of my own experience. It's when we get to the series, and we both have picked up several series of best friend groups of all lesbians, and they're all femme lesbians.
Even the tomboy is still
He's
only a tomboy, usually because of occupation or sport, if that sport is not their occupation.
Yes, exactly. They all wear sundresses all the time, and even when it's fall in New York City, they're all wearing sundresses. I just have so many, like, I would love to do a deep dive in some of the clothing choices for these books because I'm concerned.
But on the flip, I will say all the butch representation in their clothing, I would kill for their wardrobes. Oh my God, to have the suits that these women have. Yes. And I've worked my way through all of the Honor series by Radcliffe except the most current one. Not because I'm not interested in it. It just, it's like in the queue and it's pretty
cool.
Because we're just consuming so much. In that series, you know, you have this kind of butch femme couple in the president's daughter and her Secret Service agent. And then you have all these other women who come in with other relationships you get really invested in. But even as that starts to trickle down more and more and more and more and more, the one leading more, not, I don't want to say more butch or less femme, that's not my intention. Cam's character remains the epitome at which it stays. So she has to stay the one that all the femme women lust after or want to compare themselves to. So there's always, it feels like a 90s teen movie with a person of color. Oh, we have one, we've hit our quota.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of like,
Which we should talk about the race in these books too, which is like such a huge thing to unpack, but you can't really get around the fact too that at least the authors that we've been reading and the books that we've been reading, it's been majority white women. I can only think of one protagonist that's not white.
Right. And we'll talk about that at a later. I'm sure we're talking about the same one. Going back to the Honor series, the one woman of color I can immediately think of is straight presenting in the books as far as I know. So, I mean, for them taking place in the major cities they take place in, especially when New York is your backdrop for so many of these narratives.
What keeps you reading? What brings you back to it?
I am desperate. Now that I say it out loud, yeah, I'm just actually desperate. Queer women loving women representation. At a point that I think I like 10 years ago, I so I remember during my emotional breakdown year, you know, we all have one, going to a family member's house for a long time, and having my e-reader and downloading and playing the role of herself. Is that the name of the Lane book? Mm-hmm. And at some point immediately thereafter, I think it was a Georgia Beers novel, I've got to get my hands on a copy of Finding Home. The only thing I remember is a dog and a woman whose hair was pink for breast cancer awareness. I think that's Finding Home. But God, it's been so long. Like, that's how long ago this was consumed. I remember then, like, just being so desperate for anything that that's what I spent the couple bucks I had on. And now I find myself kind of equally as desperate. Like, if it has queer characters in it, I seek it out right now. I think the reason I keep staying with serials, usually somebody gets engaged and or gets married in a serial. And as a person who is married to another lady, I have no representation anywhere. I almost said her name. We often feel like we're the litmus test for everybody in our peer group.
Yeah.
So, yeah, consuming a lot of this noise, trying to, like, indirectly find myself. None of them look like me. None of them sound like me. But I will keep projecting wherever I need to see it. What about yourself?
I think kind of the same. I think desperate is a good descriptor. Like, I have moments of desperation where all I want are the same feel-good, especially around the holidays when, like, every channel right now is coming out with some new Hallmark-y holiday movie, and I crave that. I crave the queer and especially the stories about women. I also, I'm not a big TV person. I'm not a big movie person. You know me. I have really bad secondhand embarrassment. So it's really hard for me to get excited about things like TV and movies. But I've always been like a really voracious reader. And I've thought a lot about the stuff that I was like obsessed with as a teenager and as a kid. Like I loved reading romantic things. I would seek out anime that I didn't care about at all because it had like one compelling romance that I really wanted to see. And I was always searching for something that felt familiar to me in that, or like that felt like a possibility for me. And I was never going to find possibility in those stories because they were heterosexual. And that's like not what I was, what I wanted. So I think I am in this mode where I'm like, okay, I found something where I can, I have, these stories that are happy and they're not of the state of the world at large, but they're about these friend groups, or they're about these families or these couples, and I can consume a ton of them. Like the sheer volume is also something that's really attractive to me. The fact that there's like so many of these stories that I can just keep downloading and keep reading over and over again.
By the next time we record, we will not be all over the place. This was a very intense little test. We'll see what I can edit this down to.
I'm excited.
It's fun. It is a joy to do this with you. We're going to cut here. Any last thing you want to say, but stay on. I have other stuff to talk to you about.
No, I am excited for this. I just keep calling it a journey. Like, I'm excited for this journey together. And I'm excited to see myself get subtly roasted by every author every time they describe an uptight workaholic. I can't wait.
I love that, like, the uptight workaholic, as you self-declare, who blushes at, like, moments of intimacy and, like, remembering somebody's favorite latte
it's
flavor.
So stupid.
No, it's not. You are a big old softie, and I love it. And I love that this is how I'm going to prove to people that it's true.
LOL.